Chapter 61. Lenin Saved. In the spring of 1919, few Germans recalled the spring of 1918, when Germany had overwhelmed the Leninist regime and had imposed the Brest-Litovsk Treaty. Germany was now licking its wounds after the bloody civil war Lenin had unleashed on its soil. Germany had been victorious on the battlefield, but was being torn to shreds at home by the new alien masters of Russia. Lenin had sent hordes of Liebknechts, Rosa Luxemburgs, Clara Zetkins, Eisners, Levins, Joffs and other agitators and terrorists to destroy Germany from within. The bloodshed organized by the Jewish communists left the Allies unperturbed. They were too busy trading populations and bickering about reparations to assess whether the spread of Bolshevism would have any consequences for them. Lenin had been saved from annihilation by the Allies' victory. Russian, Ukrainian and other victims of his tyranny had been about to liberate Russia, helped by Germany. The armistice arrived in the nick of time for Lenin and his henchmen. In 1917, the German government had released Lenin into Russia like a plague virus. The high command had known enough about Lenin's destructive capabilities to be confident he would overthrow Imperial Russia, thus freeing the German army to meet the newly arrived American forces in France. It was a gamble the German government had to take. The Eastern Front collapsed, but Lenin's communist plague nearly destroyed Germany as well as Russia. A few Allied personalities had shown concern at the time. Churchill warned, "Lenin is consumed by hatred. No Asiatic tyrant, even Genghis Khan or Tamerlane, has cost the lives of so many men and women." The French newspaper journal A Debats wrote, "Bolshevism is a curse. If we do not take care of it, then Germany will have to." In the spring of 1918, Germany had taken care of Lenin. The German army had occupied Russia's richest lands and controlled most of the food supplies, 73% of the coal and almost all of the oil needed for the survival of Bolshevism. Russia, observed Churchill, was at Germany's disposal. The wheat granaries of Ukraine and Siberia, the oil from the Caspian, all the resources of a vast continent would feed and maintain the German armies. Germany has in fact won all she could win. The Russian people had been massacred by the millions by alien, bloodthirsty commissars. They had greeted the Germans as liberators. The German army, wrote Churchill, was advancing with efficiency and discipline. Small groups of trained soldiers occupied most of the areas necessary to supply Germany with food. Odessa fell on March 13, 1918, Nikolaevsk on the 17th, Kherson on April 8. On April 28, the Germans established a military dictatorship in the Ukraine under the direction of General Skoropadsky. On May 1, Sebastopol was taken as well as a part of the Russian fleet stationed in the Black Sea. On May 8, Rostov on the Don fell. 5 reserve divisions had been sufficient to control this rich and fertile region, as vast as a major state. World Crisis, Volume 4, page 101. Churchill himself even admitted that the Germans had been greeted as liberators by the Russian people. The Germans presented themselves as liberators and were spontaneously received as such, not only by the whole population, but by the most hostile patriots. A dose of communism made any other form of authority desirable to the Russians. With the arrival of the German steel helmets, life had become tolerable. With order and calm, everything had become easy and efficient. The soldiers' stern discipline was preferable to the relentless persecution of a fanatic ministry of thugs. As the Germans occupied Russia, they created semi-independent states, which would form an anti-communist bulwark. Churchill had drawn a parallel between Germany's conquest of Russia and Napoleon's conquest of Germany in 1806. Both conquests had created states that cooperated with the conquerors. Churchill, who would later become an enthusiastic ally of the very red thugs he was now decrying, was in 1917 considerably more lucid. Under the direction of a victorious Germany, Finland, Estonia, Lithuania, Eastern Poland, Ukraine, Bessarabia and the Caucasus would be separated from a communized Russia and constituted into autonomous states. Their freedom, if not their independence, would be due to Germany. Churchill's perspicacity proved correct. All these German-sponsored states had been saved from a communist holocaust. Finland was spared further Bolshevik atrocities only with the intervention of General von Falkenhorst. Faced with the disaffection and revolt of the people he had enslaved, Lenin made a second desperate attempt to sue for peace with Germany. On August 12, 1918, a treaty was signed between Lenin and Germany pushing the Soviet regime's borders east of the Beresina River. The communists promised to recognize the independence of all the new states, with the addition of Georgia, Armenia, and Azerbaijan. The treaty was a tremendous achievement for Germany. For Lenin, it was only a piece of paper to mark time. He had introduced a new element of warfare, internal subversion in the affairs of other countries. He was waiting for the results before resuming military control of the independent states. France's most famous historian, Pierre Renouvin, wrote, "Ludendorff wanted to implement a policy of expansionism in the East. The day after the Brest-Litovsk Treaty, he had advanced his troops as far as the Don and Crimean regions. By June 1918, he was looking at Georgia as a potential pro-German country. With Georgia's wealth, men, and raw material, he perceived the possibility of establishing an action base which would lead to British India. By July 1918, Germany was well established in the Crimea. It had reached Kars, Ardahan, Batum, and their oil wells. It was at the door to Persia, Arabia, and India. The German flag was flying from the Baltic to the Black Sea. This conquest had been achieved almost without combat. Despite 3 years of anti-German propaganda, the Russians and other populations had become friendly to Germany. Pax Germanica meant a stop to the Marxist massacres." Lenin had to swallow his rage. Wearing his cap of false proletarianism, he would scream to the Bolshevik Congress, "Yes, this peace is an unprecedented humiliation for Soviet power, but we are in no position to force history." Churchill echoed Lenin's lament, "Russia is at Germany's disposal." Germany's victory over Lenin was also Europe's victory over Bolshevism. The states that had escaped massacres were now enjoying the freedom to develop along their own characteristic lines. Their economic strength would be a buffer against communist imperialism. All these states were as distinct as France or Germany. They had their own customs, their own language, history, and culture. They were also part of Greater Europe and a vital component in its survival. The Soviet Union was reduced to the limits of the old Duchy of Muscovy. Churchill said Moscow could have been taken with 20,000 men. Lloyd George commented, "We are witnessing the collapse of Bolshevism." Lenin, who never gave any quarter, expected Europe to finish him off. His objective was to communize Europe and then the whole world, and there was no question in his mind that he was at war with all nations and states. The Europeans, on the other hand, were consumed with age-old and petty quarrels over pieces of real estate. Lenin's international communist imperialism was quite beyond their comprehension. They had no understanding of Lenin's second front, internal subversion within their own borders. Because of this lack of understanding, the various and fragmented European nations did not see the need to destroy Marxism-Leninism while they had the chance. The British-led allies of 1939 would still not understand what communism was about. In November 1918, the only thing that stood between communism and the rest of Europe was German troops and their eastern allies, the first victims of communism. Churchill, who had not fathomed all of Lenin's ambitions, had nevertheless observed enough of communist methods to declare, "Of all the tyrannies in history, Bolshevism is the most awful, the most destructive, the most degrading. It is not a political doctrine, it is a disease. It is not a creation, it is an infection." Yet this infection, which the German divisions had neutralized since March 1918, was going to be unleashed quite deliberately by Churchill and his allies. They ordered, as part of the armistice, that German troops abandon Russian territory in its entirety. Scores of millions of people would also be abandoned to the most awful tyranny. The withdrawal of Germans was not made good by any Allied presence or commitment to protect the local populations. the Eastern Europeans could not believe the Western powers would let them be slaughtered by the communists. In November 1918, the French, the British, the Italians, the Americans, and also the Japanese still had millions of armed soldiers who could have stopped the Soviet hordes. Churchill recalled, "All these new countries turned to the Allies with joyful conviction." The lack of Allied resolve hardened Lenin's position. He rejected the Allies' peace conditions and particularly Wilson's 14 points. He also declined to accept Constantinople, which the British government had offered in 1917. He needed nothing from the Allies. Peace, declared Lenin, must not be established by the capitalists but must be imposed on the bourgeois capitalists by the proletarian masses. Churchill, The Great War, page 328. The Allies were in for another shock. Lenin abrogated all treaties, contracts and debts that had been acknowledged by Russia before his coup. Billions of dollars had been lent to Russia for industrial development as well as to support its involvement in the war against Germany. The Allies clung to the belief that somehow Lenin would honor these commitments and were amazed when they never got a single kopeck. Wilson was more indecisive than ever. "What is our position concerning the Bolsheviks? No one can say. My policy is to let them stew in their own juice. To send troops to contain them would be like using a broom to contain a high tide." Clemenceau's vision did not extend beyond Germany and was incapable of conceiving any other threat than Germany. If Germany is allowed to exploit and colonize Russia, the blood which flowed for 5 years will have been spent in vain. If Germany takes over Russia politically and above all economically, Germany will have won the war. Clemenceau thought it preferable to see the victory of world communism rather than let the Germans get away with anything. Clemenceau's own government was at that very moment being undermined by Lenin's agents, but Clemenceau was too obsessed with Germany to notice it. Only Churchill had a clear vision of this tragic situation, but as an opportunistic politician he was careful not to express his opinion publicly. Instead, he expressed his views in the form of a scenario dreamed by various Allied statesmen. "We do not doubt it is not only physically but morally possible to take over Russia, but the task is too big for the victors alone. To accomplish it, we must enlist Germany's help. Germany knows Russia better than we do. Its troops now occupy the richest and most populous regions and constitute the only guarantee of civilization. Let us give Germany its chance. This proud and tenacious nation will thus avoid the humiliation of defeat. Almost consciously, Germany will have slipped from our sworn enemy to our natural collaborator. Nothing is possible in Europe without Germany, but everything is possible with Germany." Churchill, World Crisis, Volume 4, page 19. Churchill concluded his European dream. Germany would be invited to cooperate in the liberation of Russia and the reconstruction of Eastern Europe. Churchill's dream would be dissipated by the reality of the mediocre politicians of the day. His dream was both intelligent and practical. He was realistic, while his colleagues were divorced from reality by their ignorance and pettiness.